The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for coming. Pleasure to meet you.
Adam Schiff from California.
You're very welcome.
Honored to meet you.
We believe that we are visiting you to say thank you for your fight for freedom, that we are on a frontier of freedom, and that your fight is a fight for everyone. And so our commitment is to be there for you until the fight is done.
The Nancy Pelosi delegation has made its way to Kyiv, Ukraine, and Adam Schiff, of all people, too, joining forces with these congressional Democrats. Someone just tweeted out, do you really think Nancy Pelosi cares about Ukraine? Does she care about San Francisco or California? I mentioned last week the spending, $33 billion going to Ukraine. And yet these same people that are so happy to spend your money in Congress, it's not even your money, it's just printed fake money in the era of all this fakery. It's perfect. But they don't care a bit about what's happening at the southern border. Really is painful to watch. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show at CRN Digital Talk Radio Channel 3 on that platform. To get to the live video stream, however, you have to go to our very own website. That would be thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and that takes you to the live stream page and also to the podcasts that are posted after the fact. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. Sundance at the Conservative Treehouse had an interesting piece about the $33 billion package and how that Tim Kaine, the senator, the Democrat senator yesterday, suggested that it be paired together with or bundled together to make sure that they both get passed. $33 billion for Ukraine, and then $22 billion that needs to go to various states here in America for COVID relief. And as Sundance brings out, a lot of this money, no doubt, is going to go toward mail-in ballots or some way. Again, we've got to be safe. Dr. Birx said yesterday, this is a pandemic that's going to rev up this summer. How about that? How convenient for it to happen right before the midterms. And I've been playing all these clips for you. The fact that the Joe Obama administration is losing support from Hispanics, from the African-American community. They know they're in for a shellacking. So we know from recent history that they're preparing to cheat on a mass scale. I saw a headline, I believe it was at Gateway, about George Soros dumping hundreds of thousands of dollars, I guess it was millions, into Wisconsin. The Wisconsin election, that's a swing state, of course. All that cheating, the nursing homes, remember that? You've got 2,000 mules coming out tonight. Quite a few of these theaters sold out from what I've heard from some of our listeners and even what we've looked into here in Oklahoma City or the Oklahoma City area. I think two of the three or four showings already sold out. And at $20 a ticket, I mean, it's pretty pricey. But a lot of people are interested in the election steal. And you've got some commentators on Fox News now, finally, a year and a half after the fact, at least drawing attention to this documentary, at least suggesting that there was a lot of nefarious activity going into the November 2020 election. Where was their courage a year and a half ago? Look at the damage that this has brought upon the country. Bitter affliction, as your Bible says. Bitter affliction and no help. People see it, even as I say, the minority communities, which almost always vote 90% Democrat, 90% of them, in the African-American community anyway. Listen to this from CNN's Van Jones yesterday, clip two.
Day-to-day reality for black folks hasn't improved. In fact, you know, because of inflation and other things, gotten worse. And so you're starting to see that disappointment factor set in.
Do you think it will change the voting patterns?
Well, listen, I think that it may well.
Well, that clip we played for you last week suggests that Joe Biden's already lost 20% of the black vote. It's gone from 80-something down to in the 60s, I believe. 20%! And he's only been in there as the fake president for 15 months. What more damage can be done? You see why it was a hot topic over the weekend. Elon Musk buying Twitter last week, and then the danger that this poses the United States because there's no more regulation on Twitter. We've lost control of Twitter. This is very dangerous, they told us over the weekend. There was an article at the Wall Street Journal. Actually, this is Time Magazine, this columnist writing how that free speech has become an obsession for the white man. So free speech, to champion free speech, now this too makes you racist. You want to talk about free speech in the United States? You better be careful. Now that's racism. This is what she says about the founding fathers. Free speech in the 21st century means something very different than it did in the 18th century when the founders enshrined it in the Constitution. The right to say what you want without being imprisoned is not the same as the right to broadcast disinformation to millions of people on a corporate platform. This is not what the founders intended. In fact, the founders, they really weren't for free speech. She says here, this nuance seems to be lost on some techno-wizards who see any restriction as the enemy of innovation. Listen to this commentator from MSNBC just this morning, clip 8.
We are living through an unspeakably dangerous moment. The pro-QAnon, pro-neo-Nazi faction of the Republican Party is poised to expand dramatically come the midterms. We're just 2 years away from Donald Trump very possibly re-seizing executive power. If that happens, we may look back on this past week as a pivotal moment when a petulant and not so bright billionaire casually bought one of the world's most influential messaging machines and just handed it to the far right.
It's like one of those conservative commentators said in that roundtable discussion on 2000 Mules, the documentary. Well, I mean, if you really think that this is the rise of the neo-Nazi party in the United States, you're going to do everything you can to cheat, to prevent it from happening, to kill off Hitler before he ever gains power. You can be sure, even as you watch 2000 Mules this week, assuming that you do, just think about what they're doing behind closed doors in some of these deep, dark blue districts of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, wherever they have control. Remember what they did in Detroit? Kick all the poll watchers out, board up the windows, and then start counting the ballots. There's going to be more of that going on if they can get away with it. I know there's more. There certainly are more Republican poll watchers coming to the fore. But the information war is everything here. You saw how important it was with covering up Hunter Biden's laptop in the lead up to the last election. You saw how important it was to perpetuate this Trump-Russia collusion hoax for years. Listen to another commentator. This is one from CNN, clip one.
No, I think there's a bigger problem that when we focus on the personalities of people like Elon Musk and people say, oh, I think Elon's thinking this or that. There's a bigger problem here about how we are going to control the channels of communication in this country. Mm. Musk is the same. Musk doesn't want it. Oh, you know, he's upset with the SEC, tried to, how dare they question him? You know what I'm saying? This is dangerous. You need controls on this. You need regulation. You cannot let these guys control discourse in this country or we are headed to hell. We are there. Trump opened the gates of hell and now they're chasing us.
What in the world is wrong with these people? Donald Trump, who, what did he pull in? 75 million votes? 75 million. We don't know how much the Joe Biden people brought in, because they got no doubt millions and millions fraudulently. But here's 75 million Americans voted for Donald Trump. And this guy, again, he opened the gates of Hades, evidently. And now Elon Musk, he's taking it to another level. We've got to, what did he say? We've got to control the channels of communication. Well, for decades, they've done exactly that. And you didn't see this kind of hysterical commentary 2-3 weeks ago, before Twitter decided to sell. Now it's all over the networks. And then the czar heading it all up, as we covered on the program last week, she's this rat. Just go through her Twitter feed. She wants to be like a teenage star on TikTok. She wants to be an actress or a singer. And she is a radical left-wing communist. And then to listen to the secretary of the DHS. This is the head of the DHS, as we know, that so-called disinformation agency. Really, it's the Ministry of Disinformation, or the Ministry of Truth, to use Orwell's language. To hear the secretary of the DHS defend this woman like she's some kind of fair and balanced observer of disinformation. Listen to this from one of the Sunday shows yesterday, clip 3.
Best practices on how to do that work, the work of addressing disinformation that presents a threat to the security of our country, how to do that work in a way that does not infringe on free speech, does not infringe on civil liberties.
Do you think the person you chose to head of it expressed too much politics on their Twitter feed and it's caused some consternation?
Eminently qualified individual, a recognized expert on battling the threat of disinformation that presents a threat to the security of our homeland.
She's eminently qualified, he said. And then on another one of the shows, he answered that absolutely she's neutral. This is clip 4.
Republicans are criticizing your decision, the administration's decision, to choose Nina Jankowicz to lead this disinformation board. They say she is not somebody who is neutral. Your response?
Eminently qualified, a renowned expert in the field of disinformation. Absolutely so.
Absolutely so, he says. You know, there was a story in Richard Stack from the UK this morning. He was pointing, I think it's from the Federalist. Yeah, Margot Cleveland at the Federalist. And she was talking about how that these emails that are being revealed in John Durham's investigation, they really are giving us some insights into how the Trump-Russia collusion hoax, the disinformation, how it was prepared and distributed. And you have now these email communications with all of these journalists, by the way, who were there to help spread the disinformation. Christopher Steele, you remember him. He's the ex-British spy. He comes in, supposedly he's here. He's got all of these disturbing accounts or reports about Trump's people having these connections to Russian agents. And then the FBI is just taking this was how the narrative. This is how the narrative was told a few years ago. The FBI was just receiving these reports or this information, and, well, they had to look into it. They had, because what if Donald Trump is a Russian agent? What if his party has been compromised? What if the presidency of the United States is compromised? These emails now show that the Fusion GPS people, Perkins Coie, they were distributing the disinformation before Chris Steele was even brought onto the hoax. They already had it in motion. The lies, that is. It's not like it turned up from Chris Steele and they had no choice but to look into it. This is from Margot Cleveland, as I say. A batch of emails between Fusion GPS and journalists made public earlier this week in the Sussman case after the special counsel's office inadvertently filed them on the public docket suggests Steele was paid for the same reason. His credentials and connections would hide the political nature of the hit. See, it was all about opposition research. It was a political hit job, but they had to recruit people like Chris Steele to give it the air of legitimacy. To make it seem like, well, actually, we've got all of these international sources as well, from the UK, from Australia, from all over the world. And as it was all created and made, bought and paid for by the Hillary campaign, and behind her, of course, Barack Obama, the Antiochus. Of course. These people, like I said last week on the show, they are experts at disinformation. But not in the way that they should be if they were really and truly looking to stamp it out. Nina Jankowicz tried to cover up the Hunter laptop. She said it was fake. She said the laptop wasn't even Hunter's. This expert who's now heading up the Ministry of Truth. And Mayorkas saying she's neutral? Says here those emails reveal that the month before Fusion GPS hired Steele, it had begun spinning the tale that the Trump campaign connected Carter Page served Russian interests. In mid-May 2016, Fusion GPS's Jake Berkowitz emailed Slate reporter Franklin Foer about Page. The note, which includes several links with prefatory sentences about Page, reads as a collaborative effort to investigate the Trump advisor. The hoax was already, out there being peddled to these reporters, if you can even call them reporters. They're propagandists. Fusion GPS continued to exchange emails over the next 3 months with Foer and other Democrat scribes, that's what they were, scribes such as the Washington Post, Tom Hamburger, and Mark Hosenball from Reuters. So the Post, Reuters, Slate, all of them were in on it, as I was saying last week. They all knew. You know, and I know I made this point last week, but not even just that the scribes were there ready to peddle it, but that the ones who were also in the newsroom that the emails also show said, nah, I don't want any part of that. There's no truth to that. Then why didn't they sound the alarm? Why when their colleague ran with the story, didn't they come out and say, it's bogus, it's a hoax, it's disinformation? Those emails prove significant, much beyond exposing the symbiotic relationship that existed between the Clinton-funded Fusion GPS and the unpaid propagandists in the press. That's because the timing and targets of the communications indicate Democrats paid for Steele to stamp their opposition research with an MI6 imprimatur. That gives it the legitimacy it needs. We've got the ex-British spy. So now we know, I mean, this is an actual spy who found out that Trump was connected to Putin and that Putin helped Trump win the election in 2016. What you're seeing here, it's all the inner working. It's a lot of things we know. But like Sam keeps bringing out, it's like you're getting to see how the sausage is made, which is even all the more disgusting. All the ingredients, all the detail that goes into it. It says here, the law firm of Perkins Coie first hired Fusion GPS in April 2016. Note the dates here. April 2016 to conduct opposition research on Trump on behalf of the Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. But Fusion GPS did not retain Steele until June of 2016. So 3 months later. It says here, with Steele's initial memorandum being first dated June 20th, 2016. By then, however, Fusion GPS had already targeted Page and highlighted Alpha Bank as suspect. Fusion GPS's communications with the press pre-Steele also focused on Page's role as an advisor for the Trump campaign and various connections to Alpha Bank. These are all lies. This is all part of the hoax. The Alpha Bank lie, Trump's associates being connected to Russia, just totally fabricated. And this is happening months before Chris Steele comes into the equation. It says here, while Steele did not name Danchenko and Million in his memoranda, his dossier not only identified Page, but framed Page as a Russian agent. The Steele dossier then served as the basis for the FBI to obtain a FISA court order to surveil Page and, in turn, the Trump campaign. See, they needed Steele in order for then the FBI to deceive the FISA courts. They needed to give all of this disinformation the legitimacy that an ex-British spy would bring to it. They were all in on it. This is from the Wall Street Journal, just a story over the weekend about your FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, performed potentially millions of searches of American electronic data last year without a warrant. This is happening last year, 2021. They're spying on Americans. Again, it's nothing we don't already know. They've been doing it for years. It says, U.S. intelligence officials said Friday, a revelation likely to stoke longstanding concerns in Congress about government surveillance and privacy. An annual report published Friday by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence disclosed that the FBI conducted as many as 3.4 million searches of U.S. data that had been previously collected by the National Security Agency. And yet the talking heads would have us believe that Elon Musk is the problem. The corruption in the deep state runs deep. It is a swamp. It's a swamp. And you know, when Pelosi and Adam Schiff show up in Kiev, it's not because they care about Ukrainians. All this money, tens of billions, and now we've got to get the COVID relief out there. And now George Soros, he's starting to spread his wealth into these deep, dark blue districts. And Elon Musk is the problem. And Donald Trump is the problem. He's not even in office. Listen to them. Sundance made an excellent point on this. These two Republicans that were on with Maria Bartiromo yesterday on her show. The silence, the gaps in the speaking tells you everything you need to know about how weak the Republican Party is. This is clip 7.
Real quick to you both, if you do get the majority in November, are these impeachable offenses on the part of Joe Biden? Will you move to impeach Joe Biden?
That's really a House question.
I'll start with that.
Nothing. And, you know, Ron Johnson's a pretty sharp senator. He hands it over to the House, whoever the House guy is there. Weakness. All of this, I think Peter Schweizer said that the Biden family's taken in $31 million from the CCP. And the gravy train continued after Joe Biden left as vice president. Back in 2016, 2017. And that's when you get to the big guy email, the 10% cut. $31 million from the CCP. And you know about Nancy Pelosi's wealth. Tens and the insider trading. And they just get away with it to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. Hopefully she was able to take a shipment of ice cream over to Zelensky. This is unbelievable, the level of corruption at every level of government, in the media, in D.C. And you turn on the news, you turn on MSNBC, you turn on CNN, and they tell you that the problem, the what's really scary here, it's a threat to democracy, is Twitter. If we lose some control of Twitter, then everything is destroyed. Back to this story about Fusion GPS. It says, no wonder Fusion GPS paid Steele. They needed his credential as an MI6 agent to provide gravitas to their opposition research and to hide the Clinton campaign roots of the attacks on Trump. See, it's not even just to perpetuate these hoaxes, these lies, these false narratives, this disinformation. It's to cover up their crimes. It says here, the Clinton campaign also needed Steele to exploit his government contacts, which the former spy did by passing the dossier off to his handler, his pal Bruce Orr, and later the U.S. State Department. They're all in on it, see? All of them are in on it. Steele thus served as a facade for Democrats' attempt to frame Trump as a Russian patsy. Listen again, please. Listen again. Steele thus served as a facade for Democrats' attempt to frame Trump as a Russian patsy. And along comes Joe Obama last week following the news that Musk bought Twitter. And he starts this disinformation agency underneath the direction of Mayorkas, who appoints Jankowicz, who says Hunter's laptop wasn't even Hunter's. Got to cover that up. And she's now responsible for stopping the spread of disinformation. You can't make this up. It says here, the email dump earlier this week, which represents but a fraction of the hundreds of emails between Fusion GPS and reporters, further reveals this reality by showing that Fusion GPS already had the storyline it paid Steele to compile well in hand before they retained the former MI6 agent. It says the same could be said for the journalists. They had the storyline in mind. They were working on the storyline even before it was delivered to them in the form of the dirty dossier. Can you believe this? Listen to the DHS Secretary Mayorkas yesterday after being asked a very simple question from Brett Baer. This is clip five.
Was the Steele dossier disinformation?
It's not for me to opine on
you
that.
You know, Americans are general.
Can't comment on that, of course. Was the Steele dossier disinformation? He can't even say. He still believes it. Jankowicz still believes it. That's why she's in the position she's in. They believe. They are believers in the Trump-Russia collusion hoax. They are the chief spreaders of disinformation. This really and truly is, as I said earlier, it's an information war. Who's spreading the lies? Who's guilty of deceit? Who's guilty of lying and treachery and treasonous activity, really? And like I say, it spreads right across the news media, all across Washington, D.C. It's at the DHS. It's at the DOJ. It's at the FBI. And then a couple of Republicans on a national broadcast are asked, now, is any of this corruption, any of this evil, any of this traitorous activity, is it impeachable? Are you going to impeach Joe Biden? And it's all they can do to sputter out a non-response, basically. What does it say in 2 Kings 14? The affliction is bitter. It's bitter. And there's no help, only God. Only God can save our nation. And even then, as we know from prophecy, it's just temporary. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, you can email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
We can begin our study today over in the book of 1 Peter. Chapter 2 of this book is the chapter that speaks of the example that Jesus Christ set for us. It truly is something that we need to think on and wrap our minds around as often as possible, because we are here to, of course, follow in his steps, to follow that example that he set for us. Peter says in 1 Peter 2:17, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. And then it says to servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. Be subject even to the masters or the supervisors, the bosses that can be wicked from time to time. Now, I suppose there is always a time when you maybe, you can see this actually in Paul's ministry, when he had the wisdom to know when to stand his ground, and to, like in Philippi, he held to his Roman citizenship and said that I've been unjustly accused of this and that and mistreated. And he had those jailers apologizing and backtracking and worried about their jobs and their standing in the Roman Empire. But there were also times when Paul, like for example, at the end of his life, when he said, I've finished my course. There's a crown laid up for me. He was awaiting his execution. And he just accepted it. He didn't deserve that. He was unjustly accused. Well, certainly Jesus Christ was as well. Look at what Jesus Christ taught us about submission. He submitted his body and his life to torturous activity and behavior coming from those Roman soldiers, and he didn't deserve any bit of it. And God inspires Peter here to say, be subject to your masters. Learn how to please your supervisor, your boss. Bring the spirit of submission and service and sacrifice into your service to God. That's the lesson. Verse 19, it says, for this is thankworthy, if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. I mean, it's miserable to endure through punishment, even when you deserve it. But how much more difficult is it when you don't really deserve it? Verse 20, it says, for what glory is it if when you are buffeted for your faults, you shall take it patiently. But if when you do well and you suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. If you do well and yet you still suffer, what does it say over in Romans 8? It says, we're heirs together with Christ if we share in his sufferings. It's verse 17 to be precise, Romans 8:17. And if children, then heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together. In other words, if we suffer with him, then we will be glorified with Christ as well. There's a verse in Philippians 3 and verse 10, where it says to have fellowship with Christ's sufferings. True Christians are called to suffer from time to time. At the very least, I mean, it's a day-in, day-out struggle, a life-and-death struggle to just kill off and crucify the old man. That's not easy to do, and a lot of times it really hurts. because you've got to kill the old man. You've got to kill off those old desires, those carnal impulses, those pulls of the flesh. You've got to let go of the world and all of its ways and go forward with Christ. Verse 21 says, "For even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps." See, we've got to follow that example of Jesus Christ. He totally subjected himself to the Father's will. You see it in Luke 22 where he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. He prayed, "Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." He knew what was coming the next day. He didn't want to go through it, but he subjected himself to the Father's will. He knew he had to. That's some kind of submission. That is some kind of example. Herbert Armstrong, he wrote, speaking of Peter, by the way, the Epistles of Peter, this beautiful little booklet, the Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope. I mentioned Paul's execution. He refers to him about, he refers to himself as being about ready to be offered or sacrificed. And Peter wrote 2 Peter shortly before he was to be executed. And yet you read his epistles and you have so much hope. Paul was telling Timothy and others, now just endure affliction. Peter told his readers, learn to rejoice in the midst of a fiery trial. That's hard to do when you're being tried and tested, when there's pain and agony. It's hard to go to God and say, thank you for this trial. It's really refining my character. I'm really beginning to grow spiritually because of it. It is possible to grow in the midst of a fiery trial. It is possible to have complete, total faith in God, even when you're thrust into a fiery trial, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They basically told their jailers, we're not going to bow down to this false God, so send us into the furnace, and if we die in there, we die in there. God intervened to protect them, but coming back to this example of Jesus Christ, it says here, follow in his steps. Notice what it says in our booklet, which day is the Christian Sabbath? That's another one you can call and request. The toll-free number, by the way, 1-866-930-3024. Call our operators, get that Sabbath booklet, and then request this one too, the Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope. That's 1-866-930-3024. So here's what Mr. Armstrong wrote. He says, Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Jesus Christ lives today. Why then is Christ pictured either as a helpless babe in his mother's arms, glorifying the mother even ahead of Christ, I drove past a church right here in Oklahoma just last evening, St. Mary's something, I forget the full name, but you see, it's common today, glorifying the mother even ahead of Christ. Or, it says, or else hanging dead on a cross. Why is it one or the other? The helpless babe in the mother's arms, or just hanging dead there on the stake? Mr. Armstrong says, Jesus Christ is alive today. For more than 1,900 years, he has been the living head and high priest of the true church which he built. Do you understand or do you believe in the living Jesus Christ? We follow his steps. Read 1 John 4, 1 and 2. We've gone through that in a study previously as well. But this is how we're supposed to live, by letting Christ in, the living Christ. There's a lot about his example, living as a son of God during his earthly ministry. That's there in the Gospels. We read some of it from 1 Peter, or at least Peter's account, about Christ's life and the way he lived, the way he behaved. We have that before us. all scripture given by inspiration of God. But it takes the living Christ to follow in the steps or the example that Jesus himself set for us. We need God in the flesh if we're going to be able to obey God and to follow this example and to do it faithfully and to subject our will to the Father's will. Always, always, always. It says here, for more than 1,900 years, Christ has been the living head and high priest of the true church, which he built. And speaking of Christ here in 1 Peter 2, Peter says, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. This is the verse right after it says, follow his steps. Verse 23, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not. But he committed himself to him that judges righteously. Verse 24 says, who his own self bare our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, being dead to sins, should live unto righteousness. It says, by whose stripes you were healed. Peter's quoting from Isaiah 53 there. By those stripes, the stripes that literally ripped open the flesh of Jesus Christ, the scourging, even before the crucifixion. This was a man who was totally submitted to the Father's will. He couldn't have endured through that otherwise. Verse 25 says, for you were as sheep going astray, but are now returned unto the shepherd and bishop of your souls. We were just sheep going astray. Matthew 9, verse 36 speaks of Christ. He mourned the multitudes there. He was moved with compassion because they didn't have a shepherd. They didn't have a teacher. They didn't have a leader. We have a bishop, or a better word for that would mean overseer. We have a shepherd. We have an overseer. We can. I mean, sheep aren't, they aren't known for being that bright. We need a shepherd. We need steps to follow. We need an example out in front of us. God has given us that. We have the living Christ as our shepherd. He's looking after our souls. He's leading us to green pastures. He's protecting us from wolves. He gives there's the passage in Matthew 10, which says that Jesus is sending us as sheep into the wolves, or among the wolves. So the good shepherd can give us strength and confidence and courage even. The courage that it would take for a sheep to go in among the wolves. You don't see that very often. Notice James chapter 4. Go forward with our good shepherd showing us the way, taking the lead, follow in those steps. James 4 verse 13, it says, go to now, you that say today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. James says, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. It's similar instruction to what Jesus gave us in Matthew 6. Don't get all worried or overly concerned about what tomorrow may hold, or next week, or the month after that. Just think about God's perspective. We've been emphasizing this in recent messages these last several days, even again in class this morning. God really and truly does want us to see everything from his standpoint, through his eyes. He looks at things so very different. God's perspective on death, for example, Psalm 116 and verse 15, I think it is. It's very different, his perspective. He says it's precious when a saint of God dies. In the world, it's not seen. Physical death is not viewed as precious or rare. It's common, and there's usually uncontrolled grief over something such as that. God says here in verse 15, for that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live, and do this or that. If it's God's will, then let's just go with it. Everything depends on God's will to the true Christian. The true Christian doesn't, as he brings out, it's not saying that we shouldn't plan ahead, but he doesn't go into a city and continue there, buy and sell, get gain, and what should we do tomorrow? The question in the mind of a true Christian always is, what does God will? What does God want? Notice verse 16, it says, "But now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." You see, too often we think that sin is just a matter of removing the transgression or removing the leavening, to refer back to the analogies we talked often about during the days of unleavened bread. Get rid of the leavening. Leaven spreads. A little leaven leavens the whole lump, Paul said. So we've got to remove it, and we do need to remove it. But there's also such a thing as the sin of neglect, the sin of omission, of not doing what we know we should be doing. And here in James, very plainly, it says, "Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." Sin is not just avoiding the wrongdoing. Sin is also neglecting to do the right. In the James booklet, I'm speaking of literature that you could order, there's another one we have on the subject of James. But in that booklet, my father says that this verse, James 4 and verse 17, should be locked into our memory bank. It should be locked in. If you know to do good and you don't do it, the Bible says it is sin. Just back up to James chapter 1. These are verses that we've emphasized so many times before on this program. James 1 and verse 21, it says, "Wherefore lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness, and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls." Receive the word, and it says engrafted word. I mean, we really have to feed on the word of God. It has to become part of us. It can't just be hearing it or listening to it. We've got to consume it. It's got to become engrafted into us. Verse 22 says, "But be you doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves." When we hear, but we don't do it, we're just deceiving ourselves. God says that we've got to be doers. James goes on and says, "For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like unto a man beholding his face in a glass or a mirror. For he beholds himself and goes his way, and straightway forgets what manner of man he was." See, it's like a man who sees the blemish in the mirror but then does nothing about it. He doesn't clean up his face or whatever. He just carries on. Verse 25 says, "But whoso looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed." What a blessing it is to take the words of God and to translate it into action in your day in and day out living. Anything else is just pure deception, hypocrisy. The hard part is always the application, putting it into practice, being a doer, not a forgetful hearer, but being a doer of the word. Notice Hebrews 2. This is Hebrews 2 and verse 1. I alluded to this already, but we can just read it right here. It says, verse 1, "Therefore we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip." God says, through Paul here, give the more earnest heed to the basics, the things you've heard before. Really make sure it settles in deeply into your thinking. Today in class, the last few classes with doctrines, we've talked about the annual festivals that God commands for us to obey and to keep and to observe. and just how every year it keeps reminding us of God's purpose and plan as he's working it out here below. And how that, as we discussed this morning in class, how that plan even extends on beyond the wonderful world tomorrow and the period of the last great day, the great white throne judgment period. And it stretches out into the universe. God made it all. Isaiah 45 says he didn't make it in vain. There's a purpose. There's a plan. And it's unfolding according to a definite time order. He's called out a few, John 6 and verse 44. He's called a few out of this deceived world, Revelation 12, 9. A world cut off from God, Genesis 3, 22 through 24. Cut off from the tree of life. And yet through this first 6,000 years, God, he reserves the right to call out and to specially train a few. To be trained as teachers, as I covered with you last week. To be trained as the bride, the future bride of Jesus Christ. So that we can then bring life to this earth and beyond. Now in 2 Peter 3, the apostle there, he's again writing under the inspiration of God. He says that with God, 1,000 years is just like one day. It's just this 7,000-year plan as it's unfolding. It's just like a week for you and me. I mean, it's you know how fast these weeks go by. God really does take an eternal mindset. He really, as I say, he really does have a very different perspective. And it's one that we ought to strive for every day as we follow in those steps of Jesus Christ to see what God sees and to submit to his will. Above all else, don't neglect those things that you've heard. You've obviously committed sins, as have I, committed acts of transgression. Sin is the transgression of the law, after all. But there are also sins of omission, sins of neglect, sins that we live in or continue in when we just simply don't do what we know we're supposed to do. My father, I might have given this quote a week or two ago, but he said in a message recently, he referred to the example of Jonah, and he said in this sermon, we run away from something that we know we ought to be doing. That's sometimes the reason we get into those trials that we talk about, but we cannot run from anything God wants us to do. God says to do it, don't run away from it, even if it's hard to do or painful to do in some cases. Do it and you will be blessed. Verse 3 says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Eternal and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? How are we going to escape what's coming if we run away from this, if we neglect this great salvation, and how great it is, how wonderful is the plan of God? It's beyond words to be able to express, Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages. He gets to the glorious conclusion there at the end of chapter 7 of Mystery of the Ages and then says what? Well, now we get to the beginning. That's the way God views it. You get all the way through to the seventh and final festival. The last great day, that great day of the feast, the great white throne judgment period, when all who've ever lived will have an opportunity to have their minds open to the truth. And then, following that, you get to the beginning. That's all in Mystery of the Ages. Yet another piece of literature that we urge you to request if you don't have a copy already. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to email the show if you'd like to submit feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.